And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post podcast, where Labor Day has passed, summer is unofficially over, the NBA season is right around the corner, Team USA almost lost to Turkey, okay? And to talk us through all of that, my friend and former boss and colleague, the great Bill Simmons. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing good. I'm a little tired. I've been getting up early for international basketball. I'm a 10 out of 10 for enjoying international basketball. I really do like it.
You were like breaking down Greece's late game play calling. Like I didn't know you were going to get that deep into it.
Well, because the play calling didn't involve Giannis, who won the MVP in the National Basketball Association last year and was an afterthought in their offense for some reason. It was fascinating to watch. There's a lot of stuff that's really fun about just the kind of turn, like the different kind of vibe. The arena's weird. The horn's weird. Weird announcers. And how physical it is. The big takeaway for me just watching these games is, you know, I'm really starting to think Serbia could beat the U.S. because these games are so physical that you actually do need the big imposing center who can bang bodies, move stuff around. I was watching the Iran-Spain game today.
No, you weren't. Haddadi, you were not. I don't believe that you were watching Iran-Spain. I don't believe it.
Not only was I watching it, I was in disbelief because it seemed like Iran was going to win and I could only name one guy in their team. But like even a guy like Haddadi, who was just a complete afterthought as an NBA player, you know, the center is kind of weirdly important in these games. So they're old school, which I really appreciate.
Well, I'll tell you, I was in the Balkans for a few weeks this summer and I met with and had dinners with a lot of basketball people, and the talk was Serbia should win. I mean, it was like not like we have a chance to win or whoever. Yeah. It's not like they have a chance or maybe it's a golden opportunity. It's like, no, they should just win. They're better. And I was like, oh, wow. Okay. The people are here already and Serbia is killing everybody.
I don't think Jokic is the best player in this tournament because I think Giannis is, but I think he's the most important player to have in this tournament because the way they play, he's exactly what you would want. It's like when we were growing up reading about Sabonis in the mid 80s and just, you know, how incredible he was as an international player. And then we saw a little of it at the 1988 Olympics, but the ability to at least put your hands up on defense, challenge some shots, but then offensively to go inside, outside and the passing and the ball movement, all that stuff. He's exactly who you would want.
I have long been, people can check the receipts as the kids say. I have long been on the Jokic is not as bad defensively as people think island because he has good hands. He's huge. He gets every rebound. He gets steals. He gets deflections. I get that the feet are a little slow. I think you might have a higher vertical leap than him.
Right.
He could shed a few pounds, like some pick and roll dudes are going to turn him around. He's going to get embarrassed. It's going to look like his bloopers on defense are going to look worse than anyone else's. Remember like when Isaiah Thomas literally like spun him around and started laughing
right
before he even laid the ball in, but he's not that bad. Like Denver's better defensively when he's on the floor. He does all those things I just listed. Like there's not a ton of evidence other than it looks really bad the 10 times a game when it looks bad or whatever it is. There's not a lot of evidence that he's like some super damaging defensive player. Now, there are going to be matchups in the playoffs that are bad for him, just like there are matchups that are bad for Gobert, right? Like any big guy is going to have some matchups where it's like a little dicier, but I don't think that he's like this sieve that he's made out to be.
So what you're talking about is one of my favorite dumb topics, which is when great offensive players get maligned for being terrible defensively and actually they're kind of sneaky, decent to pretty good in a lot of different ways because of one reason. They're so freaking smart. They're like basketball savants. So you take somebody like Curry, who I think the convention is he's not a good defensive player, right? But he's in the right spots at all the time and he'll get weird charges at the perfect time and his IQ is so high he can kind of cheat it. And Larry Bird was like the all-time example of this. Like Bird was actually like, I think he even made an all-defensive team. But when you watched him, you wouldn't have think like, oh, that's somebody I want guarding James Worthy. And he really probably wasn't. But he was so smart and he knew how to do so many different things. Magic was another one. Magic couldn't have guarded me, but he kind of knew where to go and what to do. And I think Jokic is like that. I think I think when you're that smart at basketball, you can cheat it a lot of ways. And when you're talking about islands, by the way, I am still the only person on Enes Kanter isn't that bad at defense island. I have
one-bedroom
shack and there's nobody else on the island.
Did you just recently take up residency like 2 months ago, or have you been, you know, exploring it for a while? I feel like this is suspicious. I feel like you may have recently took up residency.
No, not true. 2016, when he was getting buried in the OKC series against Golden State, and the wisdom was like, you can't keep him out there. And meanwhile, every time he was out there, he was like crashing the boards, and it wasn't like the other guys they had out there were like, you know, immeasurably awesome on defense. And that was when I thought it skewed a little too far. It's like, yeah, he can look bad. If he gets trapped on the wrong guard, they're going to go by him. Like, it happens. There, you could say that about 2/3 of the big men in the league, but sometimes I think if somebody's bringing other stuff to the table, you have to kind of value it in a what they bring to the table, what they take off the table kind of way. And I always thought he was underrated. Ironically, he ended up on my favorite team. They might have gotten him maybe a year too late. We'll see. But I think sometimes we get carried away with some of this stuff.
Larry Bird, I don't think I knew this. 3-time second team all defense.
Yeah.
I don't think I knew that he made that three. I mean, if you would have given me one, like every really good player will make one. Like it's like, oh yeah, that guy's really good. He'll make one. Three. Okay. I didn't know that.
And deserved all of it. He basically, Heinsohn used to talk about this during the CBS games. He basically created the free safety position for basketball. Like he would just jump. They would put him on the worst guy on the other team. And then he would roam around like a free safety. So, and this was during the days when guys like Kent Benson were playing, you know, so you could put him on Kent Benson. You knew Kent Benson wasn't going to do anything. And then he could just leave Kent Benson and run around. But Bob Ryan thought game 6 of the 86 finals was Bird's greatest game. And statistically, it wasn't, but it really was because of the two-way impact. And that's the game, like if you didn't know if Larry Bird was great at defense or not, that's the game because he's just all over the place. I can't believe we're talking about Bird. This is great.
Team USA to Bird.
I'm so happy.
It just happened. By the way, one last thing on Curry. Curry also, I mean, first of all, he's small, right? So that hurts him, or he's skinny. But he also is a victim of like everyone else on his team is an awesome defensive player, or every one of their core players is an awesome defensive player. So like when push comes to shove and you have nothing else to do, there's no other strategy other than, well, attack that small, skinny guy. So he looks bad. Almost in comparison, he's a victim of how good his own team is. I have a very important question for you.
Yeah.
Have you recovered from the Devin Booker incident yesterday? I feel like Devin Booker may have put up a W on you on Twitter yesterday. I'm not sure how you feel about it on Twitter.
I honestly didn't see it because I was really busy yesterday. I had my fantasy football draft and I don't look at my Twitter replies. So if he tweeted back, I don't know, but I did see one of the sports blog posts somebody mailed to me because this is stuff sports blog was trying to blame me for Jason Tatum getting hurt basically. Cause I did the Devin Booker tweet and like 17 minutes later, Tatum rolled his ankle. And because people are morons, it becomes, well, see, this is why you don't play Team USA. Cause you get hurt. It's like, well, I'm pretty sure you can get hurt in any basketball game and all these guys play pickup during the summer. So to say it's Team USA's fault that somebody rolls their ankle easily could have happened. Him playing in Pasadena on a Tuesday night, I think that's idiotic.
Well, DeMarcus Cousins just tore his ACL like weeks ago. I mean,
people get hurt all the time in pickup games. So what was Booker's tweet?
He retweeted your anxious tweet about Tatum in the wake of the injury and said prayers up, and people read it as,
I feel like
between this and the Landry Shamet feud, I'm calling it a feud. I'm not even calling it a dust up. I'm saying you straight up have a feud with Landry Shamet. I feel like you're entering a stage where you're creating some enemies in the NBA player community. I kind of like it.
Well, here's why this is completely absurd. And this is, I guess, where we are in 2019 as sports media members and as fans.
Put down your Metamucil before you start.
Hold on. No longer are we allowed to be critical in any way of any NBA player. That's the new reality of the player empowerment era. When I say that I thought Devin Booker should have played Team USA, Why am I saying, am I saying that to be a dick? Am I saying that to, you know, take a drive-by shot at him? No. I'm saying it because I think he's really talented. And here's his career so far. He played at the University of Kentucky for 1 year and they made the Final Four. That was the most important games he's ever played in because he goes to Phoenix and he's on lottery teams for 4 straight years. They won 17 games last year. He's never played in a meaningful professional basketball game in his life. And I find it hard to believe that it wouldn't make him better to play on Team USA and to have Popovich and Steve Kerr and all these coaches. Like, how many coaches has Devin Booker had on the Suns in 4 years? He had a guy named Igor last year who last year got fired.
Don't call him a guy named Igor. I can't stand for that. I can't stand. Igor Kokoschkov's a good coach.
Great. I just called him a guy named Igor, and you can't take it back. You can't edit it out. He's never played with a real point guard. He's never really played on a good offense, I would say. And the highlights of his career have been these meaningless scoring explosions. He scored 70 against the Celtics in a game Phoenix lost by double figures.
And the Celtics, and the Celtics laughed at him.
Yeah. So here's the thing. I think it would really help him career-wise to be in a situation where he's in China in a scary arena with different rules against, you know, with some real adversity. And if you looked at some of the stuff that the guy said after the Turkey game yesterday, guys like Miles Turner and Joe Harris, Turner's played in some playoff games. Joe Harris really got his first taste last year in the playoffs and he was terrible. You can't tell me it's not helpful to be in games like that. And I think this Team USA really could use Booker. So me talking about this I'm not throwing grenades at the dude. I'm just disappointed that people don't care about this more. I had Steve Nash on my podcast, which went up today. And we talked last week. We did the interview last week before this Booker thing happened. And one of the things he was saying was how important it was for him to play in the Olympics in 2000 that he thought it changed the course of his career. The whole experience and just different atmosphere and proving himself against different guys. And you hear this over and over again with guys. I've talked on my podcast about the 2008 Olympics that had Kobe and Kidd on the team. And I don't think it's a coincidence that coming out of that season, Wade, LeBron, and Carmelo, and Dwight Howard all had the best years of their career because they were in that infrastructure and you're just going to learn stuff. You're going to learn little practice habit stuff. You're going to learn little competitive stuff. You're going to learn about the routines of other guys. You're going to learn tips from coaches. And for an NBA player to say, now, actually, I don't need that stuff. I'm just better off working out on my own and getting ready for the season. It's like, guess what? Devin Booker's team is going to go 25-57 this year. This playing in this would have been the highlight of his thing. So you could say it's critical of him, but I'm more like disappointed and confused that he wouldn't want to play in something like this, because I would think as a basketball player and a competitor, it would be a meaningful experience for him and it would help his career. Am I wrong?
Well, first of all, I think it's just objectively different for the non-American players, right? Because the pressure to play if you're an NBA player from a country that's not the U.S. is enormous because they don't have the margin for error of the 20 best guys skip any international tournament like what has happened to us. And look what happened to Canada. Canada brought like nobody and they got smoked and they're out already. So I think the Nash versus an American player is just different. And look, Booker, it's funny because I eventually just sort of lost track of all the dudes who were withdrawing from Team USA because I was on vacation and it just was like every day Windhorst was tweeting, Marvin Bagley has withdrawn, Julius, like everyone was withdrawing. So I just sort of lost track of it. And then I get back and I start, you know, prepping for the World Cup and I watch our first game and it's without even knowing any of this background of the Bill Simmons, Devin Booker blood feud. Which is what I'm calling it. I thought to myself, boy, if there's one guy I wish were on the team, it's Booker, because of everything he fits the profile of the team of like young combo guard who has had four wasted years is strong, but has had four sort of aimless years in Phoenix. Put him in an atmosphere where he's got to figure out his role amongst a bunch of elite guys. And he's going to face adversity and maybe he's going to have some moments and he's going to have to pick up a defensive scheme on the fly. He's going to have to pick up multiple defensive schemes. You can see them switching defensive schemes like five times within the same game. I think all that stuff he's going to have to play for Pop, And that's the whole thing in and of itself. That said, all of, so
and
I,
Steve Kerr.
And Steve Kerr, I get it. I get everything you're saying. Like, he's better than a lot of the guys on the team. I'm not in China covering Team USA. You know why? Cause I wanted to take a vacation. I am sympathetic to the idea of, like, if you do that. Now, it's a little different if you're on a lottery team because your summer starts on April 15th versus
it's a little different. His season ended in April 9th.
I get
what
it.
What are you talking about?
I get it. But I'm not going to sit here and he can do what he wants. He's not getting paid for it.
Oh, man.
He's not getting paid for it. He can do whatever he wants.
The millennials have gotten you. Now even you're afraid to criticize people. This is sad. This is a sad day for old guys on the couch like myself.
It's not, if I were a Suns fan, I would want him to go. I can't get worked up about it when everyone is skipping it.
That's the thing. I wasn't worked up about it either. I made one tweet. I just am disappointed as a basketball fan because we've seen over and over again how this can be a transformative career experience for somebody. We saw it with Kevin Durant in 2010. He became the guy on that world championships team in Turkey.
In Turkey.
You know, which was basically like a volatile road game, right, for the Americans.
And that was considered like a young, scrappy team. And then you compare it to this team, like, boy, this team is not very good by Team USA standards.
Well, they need, you know, that team had Durant. Every one of these teams, and this is why I love Team USA and I love international basketball, because it reverts back to the most primitive form of basketball. Everybody at some point has to have a guy, and the guy has to step up. And the best example of this was 2008 in the Olympics, when that team was absolutely loaded, and all of a sudden they're in Spain, they're playing at a weird hour, nobody in America is even watching, it's the middle of the night, and it's starting to slip away, and Kobe was kind of like, I got this. And he came and he made some big shots because LeBron wasn't quite ready yet. He was probably, a couple years away from being the I got this guy. And in that game, it was Kobe. And then in 2012, which was a little similar, I went to that game in London where they played Spain. And there were some dire straits there. They couldn't get Chris Paul back in the game at one point.
This is the thing you're bringing up is like, everyone is, not everyone, people are, people who are just tuning in are like surprised that Turkey almost beat us. Our A team has had close, like our AAA team has had like pretty close games against other teams, A teams in the Olympics. Like those gold medal games have mostly not been easy games.
2008 and 12, there was a moment when it really seemed like they were going to lose. And I remember I was sitting with my friend Hershey and we were both panicking with like five minutes left. The other thing is you have these weird rules in the international where, you know, you can't sub somebody in unless there's a real buzzer, right? So I still remember, I think it was either Chris Paul or LeBron just at the bench for 3 minutes waiting to come in, and you can't come in until, you know, the flow of the game stops. I forget what the
I like
the
that rule. I like that the take foul is just always an intentional foul, which almost cost us the game yesterday because Joe Harris took a take foul, and then they missed four free throws in a row.
It was a choke.
It's just incredible.
Turkey should have won. Then the other thing was when we talk about like the guy at the end of the game, Mitchell tried to take over in regulation and couldn't do it, you know, and that was where and this is what I love about this stuff. We're going to play Serbia at some point.
Hopefully.
And I think Serbia can beat this team.
I don't think there's a question that Serbia can beat the U.S. I don't think that's even a question.
If they were favored in the game, I wouldn't be shocked. I don't think they will be because they know they can get American money, but like Serbia being favored by one wouldn't surprise me. But there's going to be a moment where everybody's going to look around and it's probably going to be Kemba or Mitchell, I guess would be the two candidates to create whatever the most important shot of the game is. And Mitchell, you know, is somebody, I know we're going to talk about the playoff projections in a little bit. Mitchell is somebody that people are thinking could be a dark horse MVP candidate, that if Utah makes the finals, it'll be because he has his 06 Wade run. Windhorst and I talked about this on my podcast a few weeks ago.
What's a more unlikely animal than a dark horse? Like a rainbow dinosaur or something? Like he's not a dark horse MVP candidate. Come on. Donovan Mitchell is not going to win the MVP this year.
Well, his odds would say he's a dark horse. I think he's like 20-1.
Okay.
He's in that mix with a whole bunch of other guys. Look, I wouldn't put money on him, but you know, if you look at who wins the MVP, it's usually like if somebody wins, what, 60 to 62 games, and that's only going to be 2-3 teams, then you start looking at who the best player on that
team
is.
I don't want to do the Western Conference playoff things yet, but I want to take this into a launching off point that is a lot of people around the league, including the Celtics, are thinking about. And you just said there's got to be a guy. And I was texting yesterday with a bunch of NBA people because people have – every team has someone playing in this tournament, so they're all watching it, even if they're not in China. And I, you know, we're just spitballing about Team USA. And a common thing that I heard was at some point they're going to have to realize that Kemba Walker is just going to have to take over the game in the end. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that, but that is a school of thought. Like, Kemba's just going to have to be like, it's my team. The last 10 possessions of crunch time are going to be me running pick and roll. And so, look, a third of the Celtics are on this team, including three of their wings in Tatum, Brown, and Smart. And there's a fourth one, Hayward, who's home. And this is like, you better believe that the Celtics are watching this more carefully than anyone, because last year they had a ball dominant point guard and they tried to at least tilt him a little bit more toward democratizing the offense, except just that tilt kind of alienated him a little bit, and that tilt toward democracy was not democratic enough for everyone else, and they sort of got annoyed by the fact that they felt they were all just supporting players in Kyrie's game. And like, one of the reasons why I think Boston is the most popular answer for who's the third best team in the East and who might be able to crack the top two. We'll get to that later. One of the reasons I'm a little lower on them than that is because I feel like we're going to watch that same movie again next year. Now, Kemba is, I think, a more normal and colorful and vibrant and fun and professional personality. Professional is not a word I should have used, but whatever. Than Kyrie. And what, like, if there is
I supported it.
If there is that sort of, sort of yin yang between ball dominant point guard and everyone else getting to dominate the ball too, it will be handled better. It will not create the kind of fissures it created last year. But I feel like we just saw that movie. It didn't end well. They lost the big man who held everything together. They have no power forward on the team, which is fine. Nobody has any power forwards anymore. It's a completely vacant position in the NBA. Grant Williams is going to have to play a lot of minutes for them. I'm watching Team USA and I keep hearing Kemba's got to take over. It's Kemba's team. I'm like, boy, the Celtics are about to live this movie again.
Can I have a counter?
Yeah.
I don't think it's the same type of dynamic with him as it was with Kyrie. I think part of the problem with Kyrie is that he's so brilliant, you're kind of paralyzed by it. And if he's not taking over in the last 4 minutes, like anybody else who would have the ball, it seems weird. It's like, well, why wouldn't Kyrie have it? The guy's amazingly efficient and knows what he wants. I think with Kemba, it just feels more democratic with him. Like, you even saw it in the Turkey game. It wasn't everybody standing around waiting for Kemba to do something. If anything, he was just trying to facilitate. He didn't care if he took the shot. In OT, he knew he had to take over and take a couple shots, so he did, because that was their best option. I think that dude just wants to win and be a good teammate.
I agree. No, I agree.
I don't think he's counting shots. I don't think he cares about his per game. And I think he's an awesome teammate. And I think with the Kyrie thing, I was going the other way. I thought they should have done what Houston did with Harden with Kyrie. Like, just have him have the ball all the time. They were in this weird middle ground with him. And, you know, where he's like basically allowing the other guys to have shots. But then in the last few minutes, it's mine. Get out of here. And at that point, just do the James Harden thing, you know?
Kemba also grew a little bit more comfortable as his Charlotte tenure went on, running off screens off the ball, which will help other guys have the ball. But he ran way more pick and roll last year than Kyrie. I'm guessing without even looking up, in the last 5 years, maybe three guys in the whole league have taken more crunch time shots than him. Now, that's partly a product of his bad team.
That's the team, though. Yeah.
I get it, but he's accustomed to playing a certain style, and his value is largely dependent on him having the ball a lot and playing that style. The other guy I think the Celtics people are probably watching
most. Wait, hold on. Wait a second. We don't know that for sure, because give me the three best teammates he ever had in Charlotte. It's a sad motley list. It's just
It's not.
They had no other choice but to give him the ball. You kind of glossed over Hayward. I think they're fully expecting a lot of the offense to run through Hayward next year. And you could feel the seeds of it happening in March and April when he really started playing well. And I don't know what happened to him.
And then the seeds came up dry when it matters.
I don't know what happened. I can't explain that. But I do think his confidence was up and down violently all season. And when it was up, all of a sudden looked great. And when it wasn't, but I think he's going to have the ball in his hands a lot. And I think they're going to play Kemba off the ball way more than I think anyone.
There's only one problem with playing Kemba off the ball. He's 5'11". So if you get a decent closeout on him, it's just different than Klay Thompson catching and shooting or name a regular. I just am interested in the Celtics and watching Team USA is reminding me of it because for years and years now, as the NBA has trended towards small ball and threes and good decision making wings and all this, it's been a common sort of school of thought and one I've agreed with that like you just can't have too many smart, rangy wings on your team. You can't have too many of those guys on your team. And the Celtics are actually kind of an interesting test case of like, maybe there does come a point when you have too many. I don't necessarily believe that, but they're going to be interesting this year. I have a question for you.
Hold on. One last thing. If they use him like Portland uses Dame Lillard, and Dame Lillard has had better teammates the last few years than Kemba did in Charlotte. If you think of it as that kind of model where he has the ball like Dame does, but also can play off the ball too. And they do, you know, they did get a little creative with him where he didn't always have to have the ball to succeed. Why couldn't the Celtics do that with Kemba?
I think they will. I just think it'll be interesting to see how it works. And the other guy, I think I'm very curious about, and I know the Celtics are too, is what does Tatum have as a ball handler and a playmaker that we haven't seen in the NBA yet? And on Team USA, you've had to have been impressed so far with his like first, second, and third dribbles around a pick and roll. Like, yes. He has a nice little
finishing.
Yeah, he's got a nice little in and out dribble. He's getting to the rim. He's throwing some nice kick out passes. Now the timing on the passes isn't quite there yet, right? Like they're a little bit like a half second late, or the defense is already rotating back to where he's passing it. But like, I think you have to be encouraged by the way he's approaching his playmaking duties, and that's something interesting for the Celtics. Now, let me ask you a question.
He's hit every checkpoint I've wanted him to hit reading about how he prepared for the summer because he's really devoted to his all-around game. And I also think he grew. It feels like he's 6'10 now. Like watching him walk around, he's almost unrecognizable. He's got the weird half-grown-in beard. He just looks
The facial hair is really coming along.
Yeah. All right. Sorry. Go ahead.
Forget all the guys that skipped.
Yeah.
This was the question I challenged you on, and I don't know if I wonder if we're going to think of the same guy. Of the guys who were willing to go, but aren't there, or weren't asked to be there, or didn't make the team, who should be on the team?
So I don't know if he said I didn't want to go, but I was thinking about it during the Turkey game. You're going to laugh. I would have loved Jimmy Butler on this team.
I'm assuming anyone that good, I assume, made his intentions clear. Like, no, maybe call me in the Olympics. But
but what if you go to Jimmy Butler early and you're like, look, dude, we think you're great. We want you to be, we need an alpha dog on this team. We need somebody who will really teach our young guys what hard work is and come through at the end of the game and do the whole thing. Just make this your team. You'd be the leader of this team. Because I was thinking about it during the Turkey game. Joe Harris is playing small forward, basically. Look, I get it. He can extend the floor, all that. I don't trust Joe Harris. If we're down two against Serbia with 10 seconds left and Joe Harris was shooting, I wouldn't be confident it would go in because I just don't think he's had a lot of big-time reps. Butler, the swagger that Butler has, I think – I can't believe I'm saying this because he's not even one of my favorite NBA players, but I think for Team USA, I think they kind of needed a guy like that. So that would be my pick.
I'll tell you who I was thinking of, and I went a tier lower because I just assume all those guys said no thank you, so they're off limits to me.
Yeah.
And I thought about Aaron Gordon, and I don't get why Aaron Gordon isn't on the team. I think I've heard that he wanted to play, was not invited to camp. I've heard that he wanted to play, and like I'm watching them play. Now, it's not like he's a great passer, but he's a decent passing power forward, and we have zero players like that. We have Team USA has no power forwards unless you count Harrison Barnes, who is a power forward a lot in the NBA, is also going to start probably at the three this year for the Kings, so call him whatever you want. And I'm watching us try to beat zones, throwing the ball to Miles Turner 20 feet from the rim, and he's just not good enough at doing that yet. And then I'm watching us play Harrison Barnes at center, and even Chris Middleton has had a couple minutes at center. I'm like, man, I don't know why. Like, why is Miles Plumlee or Mason? Why is Mason Plumlee on the team, and Aaron Gordon is not on the team? Probably because Mason Plumlee has played on the team before, so they view it as, you know, he's committed to the program, he can play, blah blah. I guess I'm sympathetic to that. But Aaron Gordon is the guy I thought about. Like, he can play small ball five. His jump. I wonder how much the extra, you know, foot or two of the shorter three would help his jumper in FIBA. He's a good passer. He's explosive. I just don't get why he was not really, like, I thought of Julius Randle in the same way. Not as good of a shooter. And he withdrew late, I think, for personal reasons. I kept thinking of guys like that. Throw them the ball 18 feet from the rim, and they're going to be making good play. I just, that was the name that came to mind.
Well, the other one we didn't talk about was Zion. And just the fun factor of having him on this team. And when you talk about, he's so early in his basketball development. Who knows? But is the type of guy who could play that position. And at least if he's 18 feet from the basket, you have some options. I personally wish he had been on this team. But I think Tatum has kind of emerged as the two-way power forward that you're kind of talking about. Now, I don't think he's as sophisticated of a passer, but I think the stuff he did, I mean, he had some of the biggest, him and Mitchell had all the big rebounds in the Turkey game. And you tweeted about this. Mitchell's weak side offensive rebounding was really like transcendent. He was jumping into piles of dudes and he was 5 feet in the air getting rebounds over people. I still feel like that would be my bet, that he has a chance to go up a notch, but the Serbia game is freaking looming. And you know I'm going to mispronounce half the guys in Serbia.
You just got to get ick out of your
it's itch.
Itch. You got to get
itch.
Popovich, you know, just pretend there's an H.
Yeah.
Just pretend.
Well, this could
H.
be, I know we're going to talk about the West. I'm very bullish on Denver, and you know, this could be kind of the start of the year Jokic. The other guy we should mention for Team USA that I just think would have been great, Chris Ryan, he was on my podcast. He had a whole theory about how we should have just done what they do in soccer and just have like an under 23 or an under 24 team. Jamal Murray, now, not always reliable, but
he's Canadian.
I'm talking about, oh, that's right. Ugh.
And he withdrew from Canada's team. Canada brought no one. Kem Birch is holding it down for Canada, and they're going home soon.
So I forgot he was Canadian. So they could have had him. They could have had RJ Barrett,
Shea Gilgeous-Alexander,
Wiggins,
Tristan Thompson, Kelly Olynyk. They're loaded. Nobody came. Wiggins hasn't played in like 4 years. Wiggins is about to get Canadians are like the nicest people in the world. They're about to turn on Andrew Wiggins if they haven't already. You can feel it happening.
Five years ago,
if the Raptors had somehow traded for him, they would have thrown like a national party. And now they're like, I'm not sure we'd give up like Anunoby and Van Vliet and Ibaka's expiring. Not that popular.
How many times do you think Sam Presti has popped in the Andrew Wiggins DVDs just to make sure he doesn't want to trade Chris Paul for him?
Oof.
Like once a week? Think he's like, I'm going to watch that 38-point game Wiggins had against Sacramento again.
He had a great game.
I just want to make sure.
He had a great game in Oklahoma City in Ryan Saunders' first game as head coach, I think. Okay, let's talk about the NBA season, which is coming up soon. Are you ready?
I wanted to hear what you thought the Team USA crunch time should be if we're down four to Serbia with 2 minutes left. Who's out in the court?
I'm not rushing into that quite yet.
Okay.
So let's talk about who has to be on the court. Kemba has to be on the court.
Kemba and Mitchell, I think, both have to be on the court.
And I probably would put Miles Turner. Just because I like his two, I think his defense has been pretty good in this tournament. His jump shot, he's taken some shots I haven't liked, but I like that better than if my small ball is Harrison Barnes at center, I'd rather just play a center. So those are my first three. Do you agree with that or are you out on Turner?
It depends. I would actually have two different lineups. So if I have Turner out there, I would also have Marcus Smart, and I would actually sit Mitchell or Walker. I would pick one of the two. And if I have Turner out there, I also would have to have Smart, because now I'm taking out whoever the ball handler is and I'm protecting the rim. And that's my defense lineup. And if I'm going the other way, I wouldn't have either guy.
I like a guy that has kind of flitted in and out of heavy rotation minutes. I like Middleton's fit on this team. And every time he plays. I'm like, he looks good. He looks like he belongs in this. Like, Joe Harris is the sexy, like, oh, they got to play Joe Harris more because he's a great shooter. And he is a great shooter. And he played very well against Turkey. He had a couple of tough physical rebounds and a steal and all this. I kind of think Middleton is the guy that I'm like, maybe that guy should be in more. But it's early. They've played two games. I'm not going to fret about this until the elimination.
All right, let's go. Let's go to the NBA.
People, it's time to simplify your morning and evening routine with a simpler electric toothbrush from Quip. It has timed sonic vibrations to cover the basics, that's every part of your mouth, and just take 2 minutes twice a day. It has a mirror mount that puts brushing front and center in your bathroom, so remember to bookend the day using your new brush. With an electric toothbrush from Quip, you'll also get sensitive sonic vibrations for an effective clean that's gentle on your sensitive gums. The built-in 2-minute timer. It's built in. It pulses every 30 seconds to remind you when to switch sides so you don't go left heavy or right heavy. It has a multi-use cover that works as a stand, mounts to mirrors. It's easy to travel with. Quip is one of the first electric toothbrushes ever accepted by the American Dental Association. They're backed by over 25,000 dental professionals. That's a lot. And they have thousands of verified 5-star reviews. Super easy to use, super easy to travel with, and also, as you'll see, super affordable. That's why I love Quip. It's the perfect gift for getting back into a routine. It starts at just $25. And if you go to getquip.com/low, my last name, the name of this podcast, you can get your first refill pack for free. That's your first refill pack free at getquip.com/low, L-O-W-E. Hiring used to be really hard. You had to post your job to multiple job sites, dozens of job sites, go through stacks of resumes, a confusing review process. But today, hiring can be easy, and you only have to go to one place to do it. That's ZipRecruiter.com/lowpost. ZipRecruiter sends your job proactively on its own. You don't have to do anything, to over 100 of the world's leading job boards, and they don't stop there. They have powerful matching technology that scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and then invites them to apply to your job. Again, you've done nothing but sign up for ZipRecruiter at this point. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one, spotlights the top candidates for you, so you never miss a match. It's so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. That's day one. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free. You cannot get it any cheaper than that at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/lowpost, the name of this podcast. That's ZipRecruiter.com/lowpost, L-O-W-E-P-O-S-T, ZipRecruiter.com/lowpost. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Okay, NBA parlor game question number one for Bill Simmons. Who is the third best team in the Eastern Conference? Assuming you agree that Milwaukee and Philadelphia are the two best. Maybe you don't.
I do. I think they're certainly the safest bets to be top two. Who are my – give me three options for the three seed. I want to see what your top three
– top three
candidates are.
I would argue that if you asked 100 people this, 5 teams would come up. Do you want to hear all 5 or do you just want to hear my top three?
Well, I think Indiana and Boston are definitely in there.
Okay. Yes.
And then who would be your other three?
Toronto, Brooklyn, and yeah. I think you'll get a lot of sexy support for the Orlando Magic.
I would have Orlando over Brooklyn.
I don't think that's crazy at all.
It's weird with the Brooklyn thing because, you know, they had such an awesome summer, and yet there's like this year delay, you know, before they're actually going to reach the fruition of it. And in the meantime, they're going to have this goofy Kyrie season where they had this incredible chemistry last year. And then Kyrie's going to go, and the first 6 weeks will be great. And I really want to see where they are in January and February. You know, I guarantee in October, early November, he'll be awesome. And the Brooklyn fans, you're going to love watching him those first 6 weeks. He's a delight to watch. But as the season goes on, That's when I want to see what happens with that team. I would have them fifth. I do agree on the Orlando thing that they look a little frisky, but so much of it depends on these young guys that we've never, you know, are like, what are we getting out of Isaac or Bamba? Anything? Are you counting on those guys at all? Have you heard any good buzz on either of them?
Well, Isaac, you better count on because he's going to start. And
I know, but is he going to actually be good, or is it going to be one of those things where you're like, man, that guy has all the tools, but nothing's actually happening?
Well, I think he is one of the interesting swing players in the league. It's funny to contrast the Magic and the Nets, and really the Magic in a lot of teams, because the Nets don't really have a power forward now that Wilson Chandler has been suspended for a long time. I mean, Rodion's Kuroots will play some four. Yeah, I guess he counts.
He has a whole off court.
Yeah, he's got something
right
else.
Now,
yeah,
so
I just saw that yesterday. And none of their wings are really big enough. Like I don't think LeVert or Torian Prince. I think they're not quite big enough to play so much for. And then the Magic have all the power forwards. They have everyone. They've signed Al-Farouq Aminu for some reason, even though they have Gordon and Isaac, which suggests to me that Aaron Gordon's going to be a full-time three. Their wings, their traditional rings behind Fournier and Ross are eh. DJ Augustine is their starting point guard. That said, they finished last season really strong. They had the best defense in the league, or the second best defense in the league in the last 30 games or something like that. And they have a bunch of continuity. So I get why people are high on them. I want to see a little bit more how real that was. I mean, the stats suggest their defense was real. It's not like they got lucky. Teams were missing a crazy amount of open threes or something. I will say this, though. Every once in a while, you get a Victor Oladipo leap where it doesn't come till he's in his fifth year or sixth year, whenever it was in Indiana. I could see Aaron Gordon having that kind of career, where people are already assuming that Aaron Gordon kind of is what he is. There's a lot of Aaron Gordon on this podcast.
He's only 24. Yeah, I think you're right. I could see it too.
I could really see a mid-career, oh, he figured some stuff out about what he should be as an NBA player. I don't know who I would pick, honestly. Boston is the most popular choice. As I've polled people around the league, Boston is a choice that keeps coming up over and over again. People just love their perimeter talent, and I get it. There's a lot of talent on that team. And Tatum and Brown, everyone is trying to wash out the disappointment of last year from their mouths. But those guys are still really young, and everything suggests they should get better. I just the big man rotation and the complete void, the Horford void, makes me a little nervous.
Yeah, I think they're the safest bet for three, and I think Indiana has the highest upside.
So
that's where I'm landing, because I just think the Celtics are going to score points. I think as the season goes on, we're going to learn a lot about how miserable last season was for a bunch of different reasons. I don't think it's an accident that these four Celtics on the Team USA are all hanging out together and all love each other. And, you know, basketball, as we both know, it's at least partially a chemistry sport, especially during regular season. And if this team just really likes each other, and with the talent they have and the ability to put up 110 in any game, that could be 47 to 50 wins pretty easily if everyone stays healthy. I don't think they have the upside of going higher than 51 and 31, something like that. But I look at Indiana because, you know, Oladipo, I'm not saying people forget, because I hate when people forget Oladipo's good. No, everybody knows he's good. But I do think we're kind of glossing over that he was probably a top 10 or a top 11 guy last year. And because we didn't see him in the playoffs last year, you know, you put him, you have Brogdon. I think Turner's going to be really good this season. The Team USA thing will really help him. And they steal TJ Warren, which still bothers me. I've been waiting for TJ Warren to go on a good team. And then Sabonis, I think, to me, that's an obvious trade guy, right? Because at some point, you don't need Turner and Sabonis. And if you really want to improve one spot, or you luck into a situation where some team season is going the wrong way and somebody becomes available you don't expect, I think Sabonis has real trade value. Kevin O'Connor keeps mentioning whether a Sabonis Jaylen Brown thing would make sense.
Well, it's the most obvious trade in the league. And I've picked not that specific one, but Indiana big for Boston wing is among similarly Boston wing for Orlando big. I mean, it's one of the most obvious trade structures in the league. Sabonis for Jaylen Brown, I could see Indiana feeling like they were selling low, and wanting Tatum, and then that falling apart because Boston's not going to give Tatum for either one of the bigs. But Sabonis, no. Jaylen Brown is like Miles Turner, Jaylen Brown. I don't think Indiana does. Sabonis, Jaylen Brown is the sweet spot where it's the right two players, and you could see both teams feeling like, okay, that makes some kind of sense. Indiana, I'm glad you brought up Indiana. If there's a team on this list that I'm a little worried about, much more so than conventional wisdom, it's Indiana. For the simple reason of, like, you mentioned glossing over Oladipo, but, like, when is Oladipo coming back? And what is he going to look like in the first 2 months of his comeback? I think it's, like, the winter is what the public statements have been. And that injury is, like, a pretty rare injury. There isn't much precedent for it. If he's not 2 years ago Oladipo, who I put second team all NBA, I don't really love, like, the vehicles that this team has to create shots. Like, Malcolm Brogdon's not really a shot creator. They're starting two centers to begin with, which is fine. I mean, put your five best players out there. They're both pretty skilled and interesting players that can play all different parts of the floor. Jeremy Lamb's not creating shots for anybody. TJ Warren passes about 50 times a year, mostly by accident. If Oladipo isn't Oladipo at all this season, if he misses half the season, and B, he's not himself, which would be totally understandable, by the way, we just have lived through this with lots of players. I don't love this team. I don't love this, the 1920 version of this team. Now, you tell me the next year Oladipo's fine. They've figured out the Sabonis-Turner thing. Either it works really well or they've made a trade that balances their roster. Like, that's a team I really like. Like, they were one of my winners in free agency. I loved the Brogdon-Oladipo fit. I'm just talking this coming season. I'm a little worried. That's all.
I think that's fair when you're talking about, if the question is who's going to have the third best record in the East, I think the Celtics are a much safer bet because we know they're going to be healthy and we know they're going to score. And we know Stevens, you know, last year was probably the least successful Stevens season. I think they went 49 or 50. Losing Horford sucks, but you know, you're going to go nuts when I say
I love
this.
It. I can't wait. Come on.
We're just talking regular season. We're not talking playoffs. We're just talking 82 games regular season.
They're going to win 67 games. Don't say it.
I'm not ruling that out. I'm not ruling out 67. I still have to do more evaluation. No, but Horford's playing 30 minutes a game and he's in his mid 30s and he was averaging, you know, 14 and 6 or 15 and 6 or whatever. And he was good on defense during the regular season. He wasn't like transcendent. I think they can patch together that position and at least get to, like, you know, 60% of what he gave them. I don't think this is like Denver losing Jokic. Like, people are getting a little carried away with the loss of regular season Horford. Playoffs, different story. I'm with you. Like, that guy in the playoffs, I love that guy. He's a warrior. He's played in a million big games. He's the fulcrum of everything that's happening, but he's also the same guy last year that team was healthy last year and didn't play well the whole year and had a ton of defensive breakdowns. So I just wonder if he's hitting potentially a different point in his career. I think it's at least worth talking about, right?
Yeah. No, it's worth talking about. And clearly
he's been in the league 12 years.
And clearly he had some desire to go back to a role that sees him play at least half of his minutes at power forward, if not more.
Yeah. And that's the thing with Horford looked at the Celtics thing, and from what I've heard, I think a big part of what drove it was he didn't think physically he could handle that position anymore. And that's why he wanted to go to Philly, because he didn't want to have to guard Joel Embiid and Nikola Jokic and all these fucking dudes. He just physically couldn't do it for 8 months anymore. I think that's one of the reasons he went to Philly.
Who do you pick? Who? I mean, it's. I'm not asking you to make a finals pick because it's way too early. Just like it just became September, for God's sake. But as we approach the season, as we approach training camp, just what's your gut? Milwaukee or Philly? Who do you feel best about?
I didn't love Milwaukee's offseason for them, but I feel like Giannis has two more levels to go, maybe not next year, but over the course of his next four. And I fully expect him to go a level higher this year. And I think all those reps he got in the playoffs are going to be immensely helpful. So I would still have them. I think Philly's upside, though, is pretty ridiculous. And a lot of it involves, is Ben Simmons actually, is this shooting thing actually going to be real for him? Or is he at least going to make people respect it a little bit, like how Giannis was able to make people respect him at least a touch from 24 feet? The Embiid upside is incalculable, especially if he's in better shape. And I just think if you're going to pick one team in the conference who you'd be like, all right, somebody's going 65-17 in the East, who's it going to be? I think Philly is the only team that has a chance to do that. I don't think they'll actually do it, but you know what I mean? Like, I just think their ceiling's the highest.
Philly is incredibly weird. They're going all in on, they would tell you we're not going all in on size. We're going all in on talent, and the talent that was available to us happened to be big. Okay, fine. They're going all in on size. Their crunch time ball handler when things got tight in the playoffs is gone and was replaced by no crunch time ball handlers at all. That's Butler. They're going to need, someone among this Tybull, Zaire Smith, Korkmaz, Shake Milton. Like, these guys are going to have to play and they're going to have to play meaningful minutes. They lost Redick, whose off-ball movement and his two-man game with Embiid was such a huge part of their team. And yet, I'm flirting with the Sixers make the finals pick. I just think the talent is just overwhelming. Their size on defense is insane. And Milwaukee, I'm still uneasy about letting Brogdon go. And Milwaukee was at its best last year. Milwaukee's default team construct was Giannis at the four. So pick your three perimeter guys. Brogdon, Bledsoe, Middleton, Giannis, Lopez, right? That's your core. Every core lineup looks like that. Now they'll play here and there with Giannis, Ilyasova, Lopez, Giannis, Mirotic, Lopez. Like those lineups were good, less than 100 minutes each, but they were good. I don't know. So this year, Brogdon's gone. And so it's Bledsoe, Middleton, question mark, Giannis, Lopez. I'm a little wary of Bud filling out that question mark. I'm a little worried, like, having watched the playoffs, I would be all
you
in.
You left out Wes Matthews.
Well, no. I would, this is what I'm saying. Having watched the playoffs, I would be all in if I were a Bucks coach or front office person of trying to see if Pat Connaughton or Sterling Brown are the question marks. And I don't think Bud is going to do that. I think Bud is going to default to old guys like Kyle Korver and Wes Matthews, who may not, let's be polite, they're accomplished veterans, may not have a lot left in the tank. George Hill, like those are the guy, and like those, George Hill was great in the playoffs for them. So maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this is all, and if Giannis can make standstill threes from the top of the arc, all of this is meaningless because then there's no answer to guarding him anymore, even though the delightful Croatian coach of Brazil thinks that he's figured out Giannis, which is my favorite FIBA subplot so far.
Incredible.
Croatians aren't messing around, man. They will make some bold declarations right in your face. They're not going to be polite about it. Something about Milwaukee
You left out the biggest Milwaukee thing. They extended Bledsoe during the season when he was playing really, really well. And it seemed like, oh, that's a pretty good price for him. Surprised Bledsoe didn't roll the dice with free agency. He might have been able to get more. Milwaukee gets him at a solid price. I was pro the extension. And then in the playoffs, it's like, oh my God. This is a borderline disaster. They can't keep this dude on the court in a do or die playoff series. And now they're stuck with him and they lost Brogdon. So the way that played out, like if Giannis leaves in 2 years, and I would certainly never rule anything out in the NBA where it's like whack-a-mole and Tinder. If Giannis leaves in 2 years, I think that's going to be ground zero for why he left, because they had this weird Bledsoe-Brogdon thing that they might have been able to keep both, or –
No, there's no might have. All you have to do is pay the tax and you keep both. And you don't even have to pay that much. You keep both. That's it.
Okay. But they also could have played it out in the playoffs. And then I just don't think they would have kept Bledsoe after that playoffs. I really think they would have just let him go. But now they're stuck with him. And now Brogdon's on Indiana. And I thought Brogdon was their best guard. I know his health thing was up and down, but I just trusted him the most in a playoff series. And I don't trust Bledsoe. And I don't think – dude's been in the league all decade. I don't see that changing. I don't see me trusting him. So you left out one thing that I really like about this Bucks team that I'm excited about. I love when brothers play together. And having the Lopez's together, I think they're going to end up playing them together with Giannis at the small
stop
forward.
Stop it.
I could see them.
Stop it.
I'm telling you.
Stop it.
I'm telling you right now, you mark my words, double Lopez, Giannis – Middleton and Bledsoe will be a lineup.
We'll bet a steak dinner right now. Right now, we'll bet a steak
you
dinner.
Watch.
Where do you want to set the minutes? 100 minutes of Lopez? I'll take the under.
Yeah.
100 minutes.
Watch.
Okay.
The plus minus is going to be like plus 17 for 100 possessions or whatever. And you'll watch. I'm going to be mailing it to you and laughing my ass off.
100,
double Lopez.
100 minutes of the Lopez brothers. The other guy who should be in that question mark conversation, if you wanted to go the bigger route like Mirotić or Ilya Sova.
Don't do it. Don't do it.
DJ Wilson.
I know what you're going to say. Oh, I thought you were going to say Dragan Bender.
Well, I really wish I could say Dragan Bender, but I don't think I can with a straight face. By the way, hilariously, they're still paying Spencer Hawes and Larry Sanders this year.
That's amazing. Wait, what? Can we say one last thing on Philly?
Yes.
And you know, I love JJ, and he's the Ringer Employee of the Year 3 years in a row. I just think they're better with Josh Richardson in that position because of his ability to defend.
Well, also, and like Josh Richardson
that's it.
last year, point blank. Yeah, well, last year, Josh Richardson, I think the Heat realized midway through the season, we've overtaxed Josh Richardson as a ball handler. Like, we've reached the peak of what Josh Richardson is as a ball handler. And he's kind of quaking under the burden a little bit. Like, his shooting percentage is starting to go down. At the same time, point Justice Winslow made a leap and became a good player and really a point guard. And so Josh Richardson started coming off more screens. Now, he's not going to do it like Redick. He's not going to look like Redick. He's not as good of a shooter. His release isn't as quick. JJ Redick's one of the five best shooters in the world. But he started to do more of the actions. Like, I think we will see Josh Richardson two-man game with Joel Embiid that looks a little bit like Redick's two-man game with Joel Embiid. So I don't know. Something about Philly is sexy, man. I like the Sixers. They're weird and they're crazy and it could all blow up and they could all hate each other and maybe Embiid is still out of shape and drinking the Shirley Temples, but I like their team.
I think Josh Richardson is overqualified to be the role he's going to be on Philly, which is great for him and for them. I think he was underqualified to do what Miami asked for him last year. I just think it's in a great situation for him. And the catch is going to be Simmons, right? He's going to decide for better or worse what happens with this team. And if he ends up being used like he was used in these tough playoff games last year where he basically does not have the ball in the half court offense and he's just kind of hanging out around the rim hoping to get an offensive rebound, then no. Then there goes the upside. I have a team for you that I kind of like that I don't want to say has a chance to be the third best team, but I think is going to be incredibly frisky, and it's not Orlando.
I bet I know who. Can I guess?
Yeah, you're going to be able to guess.
Chicago.
No. No way.
Okay.
I kind of like Miami.
Well, they're the sixth team. If you're going to say that I omitted a team from this conversation, it's Miami.
Couple things going on with them. Dragic in a contract year. Now he's 33, but you and I have always loved Dragic. He's had an up and down Miami experience for a variety of reasons, but I still think, you know, if they're doing point justice and Dragic is your third guard, change of pace guy off the bench with,
I know,
I think potential NBA Twitter hero for his rookie season, Tyler Hero.
Yeah. Well, I thought you were going to say Deion Waiters.
Well, so have you seen? I know we've talked about it during our weekly meetings on Waiters Island, but there's been some impressive Instagram photos of waiters.
I've looking
completely ripped, showing off the six pack. So you got that. You know, I've always liked Olynyk. James Johnson, like every 3 years is good. Every 4 years, it's like a presidential election. You don't know when it's going to happen. And then, and Adebayo, like, I just kind of like the team. I like how the pieces are, and I think they have a great coach. I think Jimmy's really going to own being the guy. Like, he's really going to enjoy it and thrive on it.
He better own it.
Be
he better own it and enjoy it because he picked it, and that's what he wants. So here it is. Yeah. Own it. You know what I mean? Own it.
So could that be a 46-36 team? Like, yeah.
Absolutely. All these teams are in the bucket you said before. Like, oh, at the very upside, the Celtics could win 51 or so. All of these teams are in this, like, if some things go haywire, they're 40-42. If things go really well, yeah, 50 is not crazy. Miami.
Well, we should mention, they have that Dragic contract expiring that could be flipped for something. And they are still the logical Chris Paul team. If Chris Paul is tradable and he looks really good the first month and teams start talking themselves into him, I would still say Miami is the number one candidate.
They are up there with Philly, ironically. They're just a weird team. They're huge. They have all of these guys who are like, I don't even know what position they play. They're all the kind of size of power forwards, like James Johnson and Justice Winslow and Derrick Jones Jr. Two shooting bigs and Olynyk and Myers Leonard. You know, how much are those guys going to play with Bam? Probably a decent amount. I like Bam a lot. I'm super excited to see him. You know, obviously he finished last year as the starter, but I'm now he's entrenched with Whiteside gone. They're one of these teams. I kind of just want to see them play. Like they're such a strange team and the mix is so weird. And things got a little off kilter last year with rotation changes and Whiteside suddenly being on the bench and Dragic suddenly being hurt being hurt for a while and then coming off the bench. I just kind of want to see what Spo makes of that team. But I agree with you. They could be solid.
They could put together $30 million in expirings right now. Dragic and Leonard. And that is, not insignificant for this upcoming, season because I do think there's going to be, there's too much talent in the league now in a good way. I mean that in a positive. I think, especially if you compare it to where we were in the 05, 06, 07 range, there's so much more talent now. And when there's more talent, that means teams are going to have disappointing seasons or unexpectedly, you know, where they thought they were going to make the playoffs, but oh my God, we're 10-18. What happened? And I just think there's going to be dudes available. Shorter contracts. Player empowerment era, and people get unhappy right away. They're looking for the exit door if one thing goes wrong. And Miami's going to be sitting there with all that expiring stuff.
People, do you ever feel like ticketing websites make getting to the event difficult on purpose? It's as if they're so big and so unwieldy they can get away with not caring about the customer experience. But with millions of live ticket events and price match guarantees, SeatGeek has proven there is a better way. You can search for sports tickets, music tickets, comedy tickets. The NBA season is right around the corner. Go to your favorite NBA arena. SeatGeek has the tickets you're looking for all in one place. No more going to 17 secondary market sites. It's all on SeatGeek. They built the fastest way to find tickets. It has an easy-to-use rating system, color-coded. Green dots mean good deals. Red dots mean the deal might be overpriced. It rates every deal from 1 to 10. That's pretty easy to use. It has an interactive seat map. Every purchase is fully guaranteed so you can shop for tickets with confidence. I've used SeatGeek many times to buy tickets, including to Broadway plays and stuff. It's fast. It's easy. It saves you time. And SeatGeek right now will even give you $10 off your first purchase. All you need to do is use our promo code. So download the SeatGeek app today. Use promo code LOWE, L-O-W-E, my last name, the name of this podcast. Bam. $10 off your first purchase. That could be a decent percentage of a sporting event, a baseball game, a basketball game. That's promo code LOW for $10 off your first purchase with SeatGeek. People, it's time to simplify your morning and evening routine with a simpler electric toothbrush from Quip. It has timed sonic vibrations to cover the basics. That's every part of your mouth and just take 2 minutes twice a day. It has a mirror mount that puts brushing front and center in your bathroom, so remember to bookend the day using your new brush. With an electric toothbrush from Quip, you'll also get sensitive sonic vibrations for an effective clean that's gentle on your sensitive gums. the built-in two-minute timer. It's built in. It pulses every 30 seconds to remind you when to switch sides so you don't go left heavy or right heavy. It has a multi-use cover that works as a stand, amounts to mirrors. It's easy to travel with. Quip is one of the first electric toothbrushes ever accepted by the American Dental Association. They're backed by over 25,000 dental professionals. That's a lot. And they have thousands of verified five-star reviews. Super easy to use, super easy to travel with, and also, as you'll see, super affordable. That's why I love Quip. It's the perfect gift for getting back into a routine. It starts at just $25. And if you go to getquip.com/low, my last name, the name of this podcast, you can get your first refill pack for free. That's your first refill pack free at getquip.com/low, L-O-W-E. Let's put the Warriors aside for a second. I would say whether you include the Warriors on this list or not, there are six teams that I think Vegas, the consensus, everybody will say these are like playoff locks. There's no chance they miss the playoffs, like injuries, whatever. They are playoff teams. Clippers, Lakers, Nuggets, Jazz, Blazers, Rockets. Now, if you add the Warriors, that's seven, and you're almost have filled out the playoff race. But let's leave the Warriors aside. Clippers, Lakers, Nuggets, Jazz, Blazers, Rockets. Are you worried about any of those teams? Would you slide any of those six teams into the potential downside is more severe than we think category?
I have one that I feel pretty strongly about as a, wait a second, why are we penciling these guys in a real pen instead of a pencil? Portland.
I'm not
saying they're going to suck. I'm just saying a lot of things went right for them last year until the Nurkic injury, which was obviously terrible, but they had a great season. They made the conference finals, career year for Dame. And now it's a year later. We have no idea when Nurkic is coming back. Hassan Whiteside is involved?
Heavily involved.
And heavily and uncomfortably involved? And I just didn't think they got better. Like, I'm looking at their lineup right now, and it's like, all right. Mario Hezonja's here. Gary Trent Jr. Scalabassier. Maybe Zach Collins gets better? Like, who's the guy that's going to go up a level? I like Zach Collins, too, but it doesn't feel like they're better than they were last year, and I think the West is better, and I think that's a problem for them.
I totally agree. If they're one of the, I thought you might say Houston. I actually think Houston is going to be really good.
No, I'm going the other way.
Yeah, I think Houston's going to be really
good. I think Houston has been really, really good. They have one of the best three players, and the Westbrook thing is going to work for at least a little while.
Harden is really one of the best three players in the league?
Yeah.
I don't.
Why can't I think that?
Well, you can think whatever you want. I guess Durant's injury changes.
Why wouldn't he be?
Well, I think Giannis is better.
Yeah.
Curry. LeBron. AD.
I have Harden over LeBron 100 times out of 100 at this point.
You're going into a playoff series. Which of those two guys do you want on your team?
I want to see LeBron.
Okay.
Hey, the guy's been in the league since 2003. Everyone from his draft is gone. This is happening with Tom Brady too, and it makes me nervous for the Pats. These athletes hit a point where we just assume it's going to go on forever. And it's like, he got hurt last year. We have no idea how this team's going to work. Him and Anthony Davis play the exact same position. And he has an incredible historic amount of miles on him. I just want to see it for 2 months. Let me just see it. Can I see it? Is that fair?
Yeah.
Can I see it to make sure he's still a top seven guy?
Sure. I'm just, top seven. Okay.
Harden averaged 36 points a game last year. Like he's still top three, but what do I know?
Okay. No, you know a lot. I'm surprised you're that bullish given how some of their postseasons have ended. Now that, I think that even is unfair considering they took the Warriors to seven when the Warriors were the Warriors.
I think they really need to look in the mirror and figure out how to make it easier on him during the regular season. And, you know, you've had 2 years in a row where he's just been a red arrow going down as the playoffs go along. And even going back to like when they came back against the Clippers in that whole season. Like he basically died in that series too. Remember when they came back, it was Josh Smith and Corey Brewer and Dwight Howard. They need to figure out how to keep his gas tank a little more filled than it seems to be in these games, because, you know, things slow down, way more physical, and they haven't been able to adjust to it. His stats just aren't as good in the playoffs, and they have to figure out why. So hopefully Westbrook can take some of the burden of that. I'm you and I, we were so proud that we didn't vote for Westbrook for the 17 MVP, and now both of us are in on this Rockets thing.
Well, I think their team is really good. I think the Westbrook fit is going to be fascinating. How he plays off the ball, if he's willing to play off the ball, how that sort that out is going to be super interesting. But I just think they have Mike D'Antoni and James Harden know how to win a lot of basketball games with weird supporting casts or supporting casts that are designed to do certain things. Now, what Russ is not necessarily designed to do those things, but I D'Antoni in particular has proven to be a pretty malleable coach. I have confidence that they're going to win a lot of regular season games. Portland, I agree with you. They're a little small. Now we'll see how, Anthony Simons and Nasir Little maybe help them out, you know, but if Collins, I guess, is going to start at the four for them, alongside Whiteside, I think he projects more as a five. And so who are the fours on this team? Again, it's either little wings like your Rodney Hoods of the world, or it's Anthony Tolliver and Mario Hezonja, guys who just aren't very good. Of those six teams, I think that's the team that you have to be like, people are going to think it's crazy to say Portland might miss the playoffs this year, or to pick almost any of those teams anyway. Like,
it's not crazy. Like, somebody weird is going to miss the playoffs.
The West is the West. Crazy. Exactly. Someone good is going to miss the play. Like, if Sacramento wins four more games more than expected, if Dallas, I kind of like Dallas, by the way, if they win four more games than expected, Tim Hardaway randomly shoots 45% from three this year or something, like, New Orleans, if they figure it out fast, I like the Spurs. I'm for sure picking the Spurs to make the playoffs. I think people are sleeping on the Spurs as a potential 50-win team. Like, someone good is missing the playoffs. I don't know who it's going to be, but it's going to be somebody.
Sacramento, the biggest strike against them is that they're Sacramento, because if you actually just look at the talent on their team, it should be in the East. You could say they could be potentially a five seed or a six seed. I love Fox. I know you do too.
I'm super high on Fox. I'm
excited for him.
I'm just worried their team skews a little bit towards the four and five spots, and they're going to be counting a lot on Bagley this year.
Good.
Bagley. Well, I like Bagley too.
So Denver is, the more I start getting excited for the season, the Denver part of this and the fact that they have a trade to make potentially. And I think they're the logical Bradley Beal team if he decides to be the next person who's like, get me out of here.
I've been beating that drum for months. Maybe longer. I love that trade for them. They have the pieces to make it happen if Washington ever gets religion. And
so does Portland, by the way. Portland also has the pieces.
I know. You like that trade. You like McCollum, Lillard, and Beal all together.
I just like putting good players on the – I never cared about the positions as much because if I have those three guys, I can figure out the rest, you know. But I think with Denver, if they could figure out a way to get Beal – and obviously they would keep Murray and Jokic. I think those guys are untouchable for them.
Well, whether it's Beal or Kevin Love or the Raptors deciding to tear it down midseason, there are going to be trades that impact the playoff race this year in big, big ways, or there could at least. I mean, there should. Like, some of these names should move somewhere along the line if things break the right way. There are going to be trades.
We didn't talk about that. The Masai with $90 million in expiring contracts. Like, is there a more fun person to just be the all-time I'm playing with house money GM spot anyone's ever been in? He's won the title. He's already proven he doesn't give a about, like, everyone's expendable. He doesn't care. I'm prepared for anything with that team.
I am too. Believe me, I've spent a lot of time trying to put Kyle Lowry's name in the trade machine. A lot of teams could use Kyle Lowry. Like, he makes a lot of money, so some teams just can't quite put together the salary. But there are teams, like, if you turned DJ Augustine into Kyle Lowry, like, that team's all of a sudden kind of interesting. I don't really think that if you turned Reggie Jackson into Kyle Lowry, now obviously it takes a lot of other stuff to even get in the conversation for Detroit to get Kyle Lowry. Like, Kyle Lowry, Blake Griffin, Andre Drummond, like, I'll watch that team. That's kind of interesting.
You know, he's also, he was the lost guy from the whole, it was almost like too many things happened those last couple rounds. And the Kawhi thing was such a fascinating thing to watch unfold. Then the Durant thing was unlike any experience we've ever had. And then Toronto actually trying to win the title and the whole country banding around them. The Toronto Philly game, Clay going down. There are all these subplots, and then Toronto wins, and then all of a sudden everybody's changing teams. And the Kyle Lowry thing kind of got lost because, you know, he was one of the better players of the decade, I feel like. I don't know if he was one of the top six or seven guards. I'd have to make a whole list, but he certainly was like a memorable player from the decade. And we had all kind of decided on what he was and what his ceiling was. And, you know, he'd been picked apart a lot, and now he has a ring, and it's like a completely different career, right? Like
he has a ring.
Talk about playing with house money.
And he has a ring. And for a guy who probably averaged 15 points a game last year, is not known as a scorer. He came out in a closeout finals game and I believe scored the first 11 points of the game and finished with 26 or something. It was like one of the great, I'm here and we're winning and I'm going to play out of character if I have to get us there. And they won.
It's very like, you know, Chauncey dined off the 04 playoffs for the rest of his career and got the nickname Mr. Big Shot, all that stuff, which I debunked in a column a few years later.
I'm sure he enjoyed it. I'm sure he appreciated that.
Well, look, he was awesome in the 2004 playoffs. The Mr. Big Shot thing was malarkey. But
malarkey? Boy, you really are going to, like, you sound like my dad all of a sudden. Baloney.
I'm sorry. It was hot baloney.
It was baloney.
But he was incredible in the 04 playoffs, and he lived off that for the rest of his career. And I think Lowry now, what everything that happened and how he came through over and over again during the playoffs, I think now this, he moves into this next part of his career where he moves into that Chauncey Billups late 2000. Remember when Chauncey went to Denver? It's like, oh, Chauncey's here. Chauncey's a winner. He's been, and he was.
And by the way, Denver almost made, Denver almost won the championship.
Yeah. And he was a top, I think he was in the top five MVP that year and he deserved it. He was great, but He became that guy where it was like, yeah, that guy's been there. That guy's played in huge games. He knows what it takes. And I think Lowry could have that for the next couple years on the right team where it's like, that guy's got a ring. That guy stared Steph Curry in the eye and outplayed him.
A couple of Toronto tells is that Lowry is up for an extension, now. And there's been some rumblings that, you know, maybe, you know, one of the parties has an interest in that. I don't know how serious that is, but like, if there's no extension there, that's maybe a tell. And Siakam is up for an extension now. And if I were Pascal Siakam's agent, I would ask for the max or close to it. And Toronto will look at his cap hold, which is very, very small, and say, well, why would we eat $15 million of cap room by extending you now? And so they will telegraph some of their ambitions, for the next year shortly. I would imagine if some of these deals don't get done. I think they're going to be good next year, by the way. I think they do.
They have the possibility. I agree with you. You mentioned the extension thing. I feel like this has been an underreported type of thing, how these different teams have handled it, right? Like Denver just said, Jamal Murray, here's $170 million. Meanwhile, they could have waited till next summer and basically giving them the same contract, right? They're just giving it to them early. And it handicaps some of the stuff they get to do as a team. They didn't care. They're committed to him and Jokic. The Celtics looked at Jaylen Brown, and they're like, yeah, let's hold off on that.
Yeah, right
same
now.
Same thing with Toronto and Siakam.
Right, like, now, yeah, that doesn't feel like
we'll,
one.
We'll talk.
Yeah, that the Jaylen one doesn't feel like it's getting done right now.
Oh, I don't think it will. But then Philly with Simmons, they're like, yeah, we're all in. But what's weird to me when teams do that is they really don't have to. You can just wait until the summer and do it. It gives you so much more salary cap flexibility. And I'm always interested in the dynamics of why a team actually chooses to just jump ahead. Like, what are you trying to win goodwill with the player? Because as we just found out the last few years, the player's going to leave if he's not happy. There is no goodwill anymore. So why wouldn't you wait and try to have at least this is the one time you actually have a little bit of leverage over the player, right?
A lot.
But these teams are giving that up.
A lot.
Yeah. So why are they giving that up when it's just been proven the last couple of years that nobody's loyal to anybody? They're just going to leave as soon as they have a better opportunity. So what goodwill am I engendering? Obviously zero.
Well, sometimes, you don't actually have cap space, so it doesn't really matter, right? Like the math that we just talked about with Siakam doesn't necessarily open up cap space. The only risk, the only risk in not going is in not, you know, and there have been some players who I think, like Gordon Hayward, was annoyed by the Jazz saying, all right, go get a max deal. We're not going to offer you one. Like it can, and then you open up the possibility, which happened to the Jazz, of someone signing them to a 3-year offer sheet or a 3+1 offer sheet that you then match. And all of a sudden you've lit 2 years of this guy on fire. Like I know you're saying no one's loyal anymore. It doesn't matter. Like I still think the years matter. We had this argument about Towns when I went on your podcast a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
Like I think it matters that the Timberwolves can look in Karl Towns' face and say, talk to me. You're under contract through 2024, man. Like, I don't want to have this conversation right now. We have years. We have years, lots and lots of years. Now you can tell me that there's all sorts of things Karl Towns can do to make my life so unpleasant that the years don't matter. Maybe I'm naive. I still think the years matter. And if I have a choice between a 5-year deal and a 3-year deal, if the circumstances are right, and I'm not saying Jamal Murray was the right guy or the wrong guy, really, those 2 years make a difference to me, and I don't want to get stuck. This is the Kevin Love thing, right? This is how Minnesota screwed up with Kevin Love. They played around with the years and got cute, and we're going to save our designated player extension for Rubio because David Kahn decided Rubio.
That's different, though. No, that's different because that was insulting to him. But this is like you're still getting the contract. You're just delaying when you actually get it. The Kevin Love thing was like you're not our designated franchise guy. It's going to be Ricky Rubio. You're over here. You're not our favorite golden boy. That was a fuck you. And he took it that way, and that was what paved the way. I think with like Jamal Murray, he's getting that money. You know, you don't get the extension until next year anyway, right? You don't actually start getting paid on it, I don't think, until the following year. Isn't that how they do the math?
Yeah, no, and if you have made a rookie contract up to that point and someone offers you 5 years in the following July, a year after you could have gotten extended, you're probably going to take the 5 years. Like, you're probably not going to risk a 3+1 and sacrifice 2 years or at least a year of guaranteed money. You're probably not. You're probably right that you can get the same deal. But these guys are human beings just like you and I are human beings. Like, if this is in front of them, they want it, as you
well,
would.
Well, so the reason I brought this up, the reason I brought this up is because really the only incentive to do it is if you feel like this is our guy. I don't care when we have to give the money. As soon as we can, here it is. So we saw Minnesota do that with Towns, as they should have. We saw Philly do that with Simmons, which I think they should have, because I actually think he's a candidate to do a fuck you deal if they didn't take
it. It's a no-brainer. You have to do that for Simmons. His agent is Rich Paul. It's a no-brainer.
Denver, Jamal Murray, I'm on the fence whether they had to do it, but I get it.
I don't care. I'm not broken up about that. I'm fine with that.
But now you move to the Jaylen Brown, Pascal Siakam range, and it becomes a little more interesting, right? Because if the Celtics went to Jaylen Brown and said, 90 for 4 years, what do you think? Jaylen Brown would be like, no, I'm not doing that.
By the way, I think that's a fair offer. I think that's a fair offer too, and it might be about where I would top out if I were Boston.
Yeah, right. So Jaylen Brown comes back and says, no, actually I was thinking 110 for four. And the Celtics are like, all right, well, let's play it out then. Now there's a chance. You have Atlanta, where Jaylen Brown's from. They're on the rise. You're not opening the door for Atlanta. Siakam, I think, stays in Toronto. I don't know. I can't imagine. He would be the next chess piece they build around. But one more team you mentioned about the six teams in the West.
Okay, last team.
You gave me that
last team. Hit me.
I think the Lakers team is a really strange team. I'm not going to say they're going to miss the playoffs.
Oh, boy.
I'm sure this will be on a Laker blog anyway. I just kind of want to see how all those pieces work. I think it's one of the weirdest rosters we've had in a long time. Like, go look at that Lakers roster. It is like, It looks like my 11-year-old just picked players on 2K and threw them on a roster together. There's no rhyme or reason to it. I don't understand what that roster is. I really don't. Well, I don't understand
it. It's a very strange facsimile of LeBron plus pick and roll dive man plus shooters equals wins, equals bonanza of wins, except the pick and roll dive man seems to have expressed an unwillingness to play center, which means that
yes,
JaVale McGee and Dwight Howard, for some reason, are going to play. Anthony Davis is going to play crunch time center. Let's not mince words. Anthony Davis, when things count, is going to play center. But in the meantime, Dwight Howard and JaVale McGee are going to sop up what to estimate? I don't know, 26 minutes a game between them. I don't know what the number
is.
It's
ludicrous.
And then so
it's ludicrous.
So then you're playing LeBron, who's a four, Davis, who's a five, Howard, who's a five, and Kuzma, who is been anointed himself the third star on the team, is a four. That's a weird. It can work because LeBron is otherworldly and Davis is otherworldly. It's just, to your point, it's a strange team. And then they have no one. And I mean, like, no one. Like, Anthony Davis may be the second best pick and roll ball handler on the team, unless you really, really still believe that Rondo has it in him to play big minutes running the point on a playoff team. Yeah, you could tell me Alex Caruso, too. But, like, LeBron historically has had, on his best teams, not quite a peer, but like an all-star ball handler, not like a dude who I can throw to and he can run like a nice secondary pick and roll and take a one dribble pull up or something, like Kyrie or Wade or on and on. And like, there's nobody. There is nothing like that on this team.
Can I just read you their guards?
Yeah, I got them in front of me.
I'm going to read the listeners because I think the listeners are like, Simmons hates the Lakers. God, what a dick. Just listen to their guards. Quinn Cook, Alex Caruso, Rajon Rondo, and Demetrius Jackson. Those are the four point guards on the roster. Shooting guards. Danny Green.
Love Danny Green. He's the fifth guy in the lineup. Danny Green is on the floor when it matters.
Okay. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope.
A lesser Danny Green.
Avery Bradley.
A lesser.
Troy Daniels.
Yeah.
And Talen Horton-Tucker. So, I would say that's a below average backcourt. God bless Danny Green. Like Danny Green. That's a below average backcourt. Below average for what everyone else has in the league. Agree or disagree?
Agree. Agree. Like I said, there's not another guy I trust to like dribble.
Best players on this team are LeBron 1, Davis 2, or Davis 1, LeBron 2, Kuzma 3.
Yeah.
They all play the exact same position. They are all fours. And you're going to have to play them all together with Davis at center, except Davis doesn't want to play center. So now I have to play JaVale McGee, who I'm not even clear why he's on a playoff team at this point in his life. And Dwight Howard, who has been the Yankee swap gift for 5 years, just getting passed around. I was like, oh, I got Dwight Howard. Damn it. Ah, I'm going to stick my uncle with him. And those are your two centers? I don't know. I just have some questions. Now, ultimately, if LeBron is still LeBron, or 90% of what LeBron used to be, and Davis has a career year, and I think Davis is a stealth MVP pick, none of this really matters. They're still going to get to 50 wins, but it just has to be pointed out that this is a pretty bad supporting cast.
LeBron and AD plus shooting, they're going to be able to build functional lineups out of this. They have swung quite far in 1 year from, yeah, we can get some minutes with Kuzma at the five. Like, that's going to be a lineup we're going to put Kuzma at the five. Like, that's a potent lineup. To now is like, Dwight at the five and AD at the four and Kuzma is like a shooting guard. Let's do that. Like that's how we're going to play. It's very strange.
You know, one of the problems with Kyle Kuzma, he's not a really very good shooter. Seems like that's an important part of what people seem to think Kyle Kuzma's game is. I mean, he's shot 30.3% from three last year. That's low. That's like Russell Westbrook, Dwayne Wade range.
I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt because he was 36.6 the year before, and I think his looks are going to get a lot easier this year. I'm gonna assume. Plus, he's not shy, so he's not shooting 30% on
I hope you're right. I like Kyle Kuzma.
Yeah, he's not shooting 30% on like the kind of looks that Rondo gets. He's shooting 30% on like LeBron's hurt. I'm taking a three dribble pull up leaning three on the wing. Oh, I missed. Well, who cares? Our team stinks anyway. Like I think on this team, I'm going to predict he shoots better than average from three.
Well, he's going to have to because him and Danny Green are going to be the two guys spacing everybody. It's certainly not going to be anyone else on their roster. Good luck. Good luck if you think Caldwell Pope is going to be draining him from the corner.
Are you waking up early tomorrow to watch? Who do we play tomorrow? I don't even know. Don't we play tomorrow?
Probably some. We're playing somebody with a lot of beards. A lot of beards in this world championship.
I look forward to your. I look forward to your early morning analysis of FIBA.
I'll try not to insult anyone by saying I wish they had been on our Team USA. So insulting.
I'm happy you've gotten over Landry Shamet coming at you on Twitter. That was a good moment. I enjoyed Landry Shamet. Landry Shamet was not going to let you make fun of him.
I had missed that for about 2 weeks and somebody told me about it and I went back retroactively and saw it. Look, Landry Shamet, it would have been great for him to be on Team USA. I think it helps him as a player, and I think he would have been better off. But what do I know?
Bill Simmons.
I like Landry Shamet.
Everyone read The Ringer. Everyone listen to the Bill Simmons podcast. Steve Nash is apparently on it right now. Luminaries from across the world. Aaron Sorkin just did one with you and Sean Fennessy. I can't even keep track of the luminaries that are appearing on your podcast. I will see you.
Thank you.
I will see you in Los Angeles shortly for NBA basketball, my friend.
Looking forward to it. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, sir. The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.